So the boy says, so being mamshich regarding Reb Chaim Volozhin, probably would aptly to describe Reb Chaim's role in addition to what we explained last week, that basically he really changed the method of Torah learning and teaching forever. Reb Chaim, as I mentioned, was born really on the seventh day of Sivan, which happens to be the second day of Shavuos. Reb Chaim is born on Shavuos, which is the day of Kabbalah Satorah. And we can appreciate that this is not a mikra, because in fact Reb Chaim was born on the day of Kabbalah Satorah, because it turns out to be one of the major and the main disseminators and those that continue for many, many generations to have the influence of teaching Torah and having the legacy of Torah continue. Reb Chaim, as I mentioned, was Nifter in the year 1749. Now, there is a legend surrounding his birth. And that is that his mother's name was Rivka. The mother's name was Rivka, was a tzaddikus, who often had a great goyin in the tzaddik, which is the Shagisaria, who visited the house. The Shagisaria at that time was the Rav of Volozhin. The different place that the Shagir was, Agir was Rav, he was Rav of Volozhin. And as throughout the years we have mentioned that we can appreciate that today that Rabbi Chosson has a beautiful shas, but this was not the case years gone by. Years gone by, very few people had a whole shas. And even an Odom Gor like the Shagisaria did not have a whole shas, but rather he had various volumes here and there. And I recall many years learning in yeshiva, and learning, I believe it was Masechtas Gittin, one of the Masechtas, and one of the things that I really love to learn, which is very difficult, by the way, is to learn the Ramshif. Ramshif is very, very one of the greatest Mefarshim, so much precise to the Pshat. In others, anyway, when you're learning Yishtikl Gemara, as if there's any flaw in the Cheshboinus of the Pshat, he's right there. He's right there to catch it. And part of the Hanor, the benefit of learning Ramshif, it was written Bekitzer. So the fact is that you have to toil and try to understand the Ramshif. That means you have to go up to learn the Gemara again. Learn the Gemara again over and over again to try to grasp it. So that alone, just to understand the Ramshif, you're going over the Gemara so many times, so you have a clear cut even before you get to the Ramshif. But Kapodim, then you understand, you see what the Ramshif, the point that the Ramshif raises. And so Ramshif, in one of the places, he makes a reference to a Gemara, and he says, Kimedumali, I think it's in Bechayris Daf Lama Dalad. And I would say to myself, what do you mean, can you open up a Gemara, look at it? It must be evidently that possibly did not have the Gemara Bukhari at hand always. It's not like we go over to the Samshank and just can then hope and understand that you can quite comfortably know that the Gemara is right there. Mamshif didn't have that. And the Shagisaya, the great grand Shagisaya, didn't have it either. Just got to mention that after Volozhin, the Shagisaya became Rav in Metz. And Metz is one of the most distinguished places, rabbinical positions that one can imagine. There's Kilis. Before that, you had Lamoshal Rabbi Yankiv Reisher, which is the Shavuos Yankiv, the Chok Yankiv, the great guy, the great Poisek, was the Rav in Metz. Following him was Rav in Metz, was the Pnei Yeshua. Pnei Yeshua, after Metz, he goes to Frankfurt. That's where the Pnei Yeshua is. And after Pnei Yeshua, who comes to Metz? Comes the Shagisaria. Matter of fact, Shagisaria was Nifter 1785. And Lamaisa, that's where his kever is to this day. There are some people who visit the kever of the Shagisaria. Shagisaria's kever can be seen, can be found, in fact, in Metz. The guy of the Shagisaria, I mean, just, you can't explain it. Because he was such a, he was an Oni Shebaniyim. Tremendously poor. Rabbah Bey used to say, and also Reb Chaim used to say, if you want to have a dogma of Torah that is learned b'shas adchak, b'daychik, really, really not allowing poverty and strain and discomfort, you know, to stand in the way, that was the Shagisaria. You overcame, well, he didn't even feel it because he was so engrossed. Him and Torah were one. They were inseparable. That basically was the Shagisaria. And so Lamais, as we said, he became like Rav in Metz. The first rush he gave was so much goyness that actually everybody was literally mesmerized. They were enchanted by the godless of the Shagisaria. It was written in many, many places, among them Taki, the Or Chodesh himself, the famous Sefer Or Chodesh, which is on Masechtas Psochim, as well as Masechtas Kedushin. The Or Chodesh is mentioned also in the Neri Yehuda. There's a Shuva correspondence between Neri Yehuda and the Or Chodesh. And they point out that the Shagisaria basically learned Torah B'Kedusha, Tahar Yom V'Lala, did not lie in a bed. Did not lay himself to sleep in a bed, and did not eat a dover menachai the entire week except Shabbos and Yontif. not either Dover Menachai, which I guess would mean no eggs either. It's a Dover Menachai, maybe not even milk. It's a Dover Menachai. If you think about that, it's not just not eating meat and fish, but even Dover Menachai, anything that's a derivative of that. And it's interesting to say that the Vilna Goyim, right, it's called the Goyim, recognized as the Goyim would say that the Shagasari had entire Shas have in front of them like you have a blood Gemara. Can you imagine what that means? The entire Shas, the Vilna Goyim said, the Shagasari was in front of him like literally like having a blood Gemara. Towards the end of his life, elderly person as he became, he lost his sight, as many, many people do, and certainly in those days he didn't have the medical technology to be able to heal it, but totally would learn about Peh. That was Shagasari. So having said that, so the Shagasari therefore had the opportunity, was given the good graces they were to by Rabbi Yitzchok. Rabbi Yitzchok, as we'll soon say, Rabbi Yitzchok, the wife was Rivka, we mentioned, who happened to be, was a Yiddish Gvir, who happened to have a Shas, among others for him as well. And therefore they invited the Shagasari, whenever he had to learn, needed to learn, that you come in, you're invited, you're very welcome to learn in the house. And that's the way Shagasari was. He would learn, they'd come, they'd learn many, many times. And it was just at the time that when Rivka was the mother of Rav Chaim Lozhe, was ready to give birth. And when she was about to give birth, she went to the far side of the home. The schoyas and the maise. She went to the far side of the home, so the Shagasari would not hear her cry out in labor. Why? Because she did not want to stare him from his learning. Did not want to be mafriyim from his learning. So one version is that she held back her cry. She didn't even cry out at all. She subdued her pain. Another version is that she went to the side of the room. Shagasari heard of it, that she gave birth to a child, and made a point, right? And made a point that she was very careful not to disturb his learning. So Shagasari gave her a bracha. And one nusach of how the bracha went is what the Shagasari said to her. He said, "You wanted your voice should not disrupt any learning." He said, "I give you a bracha that your child's voice of learning will be heard," he said, "throughout the world." And that was the B'chaim Volozhin. So it is said that B'chaim Volozhin actually came into this world with the bracha of the Shagasari, the godless. Another version was that, also because of the same reason, that she held back from crying and so on, not to, again, to be mafriya, the Shagasari, from learning. So the Goyin says that just like she wanted to, because the Pshati, they said also another thing. They said that she wanted to give birth in a dafke at the time she hoped when the Shagasari is learning. So the child that is born would be born in an atmosphere of Torah. That's another version. And especially those days, people would give birth at home. You didn't go to a hospital. Everybody gave birth at home. That's why you had a midwife and so on and so forth. So Shagasari said that just like she wanted to ensure that her child would hear the voice of Torah, the whole world now will hear his voice of Torah. Again, of the Shagasari. Subsequently, again, as Rav Chaim Volozhin became a Talmud, very, very young. At a young age, he became a Talmud of the Shagasari. So in addition of, as saying, coming to this world with a bracha of the Shagasari, becomes a Talmud of Shagasari that we touched upon last week. Also, we said it was a Talmud of Rav Paul Hamburger, which we also touched about. But the interesting thing is that the turning point of his life, of course, was he became a Talmud of the Goyim. Coming to the Talmud of the Goyim, he goes to Vilna at the age of 19. So you can realize he was a Talmud of the others at a very, very young age. He was already an Ilui at a young age. He was able to learn from the other Gedolim at a very young age. The age of 19 becomes a Talmud of the Vilna Goyim. And he told the Goyim at that time that he learned and reviewed all the Masechtos and Seder Moed, he said, 14 times. He told the Goyim that he reviewed all the Masechtos and Seder Moed 14 times, implying that he basically knew them well. And the Goyim said, "You learned Seder Moed only 14 times, expect to know it?" So B'chaim says, "Well, how many times do I have to learn it? 101 times?" The Gemara says, "Mei pon ve'chod." And the Goyim said, "No, there's no limit. You can learn it your entire life. There's so much to know, you can't say that you know it. There's so much to know. You can learn it your entire life, and there'll always be there something to know." So, of course, the Vilna Goyim goes down, as we know, to be Reb Chaim Volozhin's Rebbe Muvik. Rebbe Muvik means his primary Rebbe. His primary Rebbe. And it's not just the Torah that Reb Chaim learns from the Goyim, but basically his life was guided. Reb Chaim's life was guided, and everything that he saw, everything that he learned from the Goyim. By the way, Gavruche, we should mention that there's another interpretation of Rebbe Muvik. Of course, in the halachic sense, a Rebbe Muvik means your main Rebbe. Your main Rebbe from where you learn to the main, your main Torah. But if you talk about being the Vilna Goyim, being a Rebbe Muvik, there's another pshat. And that is the pshat is that the word Muvik, and that's found in the Tosfos Yom Tov, by the way, found in the Tosfos Yom Tov, Perek Beis above Metzia, to mean a teacher who inspires the Talmud to shine. Muvik from Lashon to shine, like Boyaku, as we find. Mamelo, that's another pshat. A Rebbe Muvik is a Rebbe who succeeds, is successful enough to cause the Talmud to shine, to bring the Talmud to shine. That's called a real Rebbe Muvik. Now, so if you learn from a Rebbe, but Lamaisi didn't influence you, that the Talmud should shine, that may not be called a Rebbe Muvik. So Tosfos Yom Tov points out Rebbe Muvik means a Rebbe who basically has the influence to inspire the student and the Talmud that he should shine. So, so he's born in 1749. So in 1769, Reb Chaim, at the age of 26, he becomes the Rav of Lozhin. Reb Chaim becomes the Rav of Lozhin. Becomes the Rav of Lozhin. So now, in 1803, he writes letters to many Rabbonim throughout Litva, throughout Lithuania. He says, begging them to join to start a yeshiva for those who want to learn Torah. As he pointed out, at that tkufa again, there was very little learning. Bechlal. Very little learning because there was still the afterbirth, the afterpains, he said, even from Shabtai Tzvi's influence was still going around. And besides the situation of being in Russia, you know, the hardships that Yidden had to go through, so learning was something that was really on the back burner and was something that was not successful. He felt that you have to have a yeshiva, as we mentioned. Now, so he believed that Poshet, that hundreds, he says, of Talmidim, the future Talmidim, Poshet, would be lost simply because there's no place to learn with them. He offered to pay all the Rebbeim. He offered to pay all the Rebbeim, he said, from himself, say he's going to raise the money and everything like that. The way it used to be, by the way, before Reb Chaim Volozhin and yeshiva, the way it used to be at that kufa, it means that when a child, up in his bar mitzvah, they would send him to a cheder, up to a bar mitzvah, after bar mitzvah, go out to work. That was the common situation. Go to school, go to cheder, alav beis, a little bit of chumash, mishnayis, mislama, whatever it is, up to bar mitzvah, after bar mitzvah, put you to go to work. If you've found that it was an individual talmud, individual student, that happened to be exceptionally, very exceptionally, like learned, that had great potential, so then what would they do? It wasn't only yeshiva, so they send him a certain rav, senator who would then take him under his tutelage, right, and the rav would learn with him and he would guide him and so on. But so it was a one-on-one relationship. He didn't have the yeshiva system, but that was the exception, not the rule. So again, so therefore, boys at large did not have really a true Torah education, and so this was Reb Chaim. Therefore, felt that this is what I have to do. I have to start the yeshiva. Yeshiva opened in 1803, and Reb Chaim being the first Rosh Yeshiva. I should mention that Reb Chaim's plan of starting yeshiva started much earlier. The first time he presented the idea to the Vilna Goyim, and also brought down in the number of places Moshe Sternberg brings down in his Sefer Talmud Das, Sefer Chavetz Chaim, and also the first time they actually presented the idea to the Goyim advised them, he says, not to proceed. Later again, he asked the Goyim again, and then he proposed the idea that he wants to make yeshiva, and the Goyim agreed. And the way it's understood is because the Goyim, therefore, did not agree the first time, because many times the Goyim wanted to be sure it was not just a fleeting thought. Many times people come up with ideas, they're very excited. But as time goes by, you know, the excitement just wanes, it dissipates. So the Goyim wanted to really know if this is like something coming from from the core of the neshama of Reb Chaim, just something that really he's dedicated to. It's something he's going to want to do, he's going to continue to do, and give it all his goal. Or maybe it's a good idea at the time, he got very excited about it. But really it's not going to have any faith, it's not going to go anywhere. Therefore the Goyim was furious, but when he saw the insistence of Reb Chaim, again, he proposed that he wants to create a yeshiva, wants to start a yeshiva, so then the Goyim gave him his blessing. And so Lamaise, the yeshiva did not open until 5 years after the Petir of the Vilna Goyim. Until 5 years after the Petir of the Vilna Goyim. The Lozhin Bechal at the time was a small town of only 400 people. And the houses basically were made out of wood. It's an unfortunate thing that Kmat, this is the way it was told, that on an average of every 15 years, a fire would consume just about every building in town. They made out of wood, and they were connected one to the other, and so on and so forth. You had a strafe in one building. It just continued all on. And the yeshiva itself burned down twice. The yeshiva itself burned down twice. So Chaim Lamaise, being the first Rosh Yeshiva, he serves for 18 years. served for 18 years, and after he passes away in 1821, who took over, his son, Rabitzel of Elojiner. Rabitzel of Elojiner succeeded him as Rosh Yeshiva. Just mentioned that in addition to his role as Rosh Yeshiva, Rabitzel also heavily involved in all the communal affairs, right? He stood in the forefront of all the troubles and all the issues that Yidden would often travel to the Russian capital, which at that time was St. Petersburg. By the way, together with the Tzemach Tzedek, right, with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, right, the Tzemach Tzedek, on behalf of Russian Jews, and to appeal to the Russian government, who wanted to either close the yeshiva or to dictate the curriculum of the yeshiva. And when this things happened, you had to have a lot of influence and try to pressure the government, at least to try to hold back on these situations. So Lamaisa, being that he was so involved, we said, in communal affairs, he was the leader of the Jewish community at large, he therefore appointed two of his sons-in-law, that they should be Rosh Yeshivas as well as himself, and to give shurim. One is, who is not that famous, and his name was Reb Lezer Yitzchak Fried, who gave shurim, and the other one was the Netziv. Famous Netziv, Netzoritz Yehuda Berlin, was the Netziv, of course, was the Rosh Yeshiva B'mokim Reb Istel, meaning he really gave most of the shurim. So let me just leave one nekuda and we start to push it to Reb Chaim. Time is moving on, but again, today you said this, to have the appreciation of Reb Chaim. We should like to also give a little Akdama before the shir. Just one more thing. And Rabbi Zechariah Geli, you know, the Rav of Kalabas Yeshua in Washington Heights, just mentioned Gabrucha, that the Shehara of Yerushalayim is very, very not well. The Lamaisa were quite close, and a number of years ago, when he was still feeling okay, Chalamoy Tzukas, he came with his Rebs to visit the Sukkah by us. We also visited him. Matter of fact, once I was calling residence Shabbos in his shul in Washington Heights, at a particular Guda convention, he asked me to come. And I think I told the Olam, I usually don't like to go away for Shabbos. The reason I went away for Shabbos is because Washington Heights is supposed to be one of the communities that still keep the old menhagim going back hundreds of years. So I wanted to see what it looks like in our keilah that basically did not change the way it used to be, going back 400 or 500 years in the Alazachim. And I think I should mention one thing that was very impressive, besides all the other things, not the place, Eikam Mokim Maharach Bozeh, all the menhagim, but one thing which was very interesting, I think, which is a tremendous chinuch. Unfortunately, this is by the wayside, we don't have that. And that's after davening, all the kinderlech line up in front of the Rav, and the Rav benches them Friday night before they go home. And I think this is a Chilma bin Ischanach, it's Kovar HaTorah, it's Kovar HaRabbonis, and it was just a beautiful thing to see. All the kinderlech just line up, and the Rav benches them. And then they leave with the parents, with the father. They just go home. Just one of the interesting mehagim of the Breuer's community. Anyway, so Rabbi Geli pointed out and said that a number of years ago, he said, a gentleman from England came to America to raise funds for the yeshiva in Sunderland. That's where he was, by the way, Rosh HaKoilel. And I should mention to you that Rabbi Geli told me that he was a yosem, you know, after the war, didn't have anybody. And there was a brewer, there was two, there was rescue, the rescue missions. You had the Rabbi Schoenfeld, the Kidu, the famous Rabbi Solomon Schoenfeld, who literally saved thousands of children. So there was a boat going to England. And then there was another boat, and that was through the encouragement and through the askonis of the great Grave Tzaddik Mechor Ber Weissmandel coming to America, coming to New York. And he had a choice, had to make a decision with which boat to go. And he says to me, the Berech HaTeva makes sense to go to Mechor Ber. Why? Because he says, he comes from the same area, Nitra, you know, and where Rabbi Geli comes from is a place called Toppelshine. Anyway, so that's the same type of a background. This is his Yerusha, this is his Messiah. He says, so the Seichel would have dictated I should go and said, Rabbi Mechor Ber Weissmandel, together with all those Yisraelim. But I made a decision and I went instead. I went to England. So he says to me, you know what? If I would have gone with Rabbi Weissmandel, he says, I would have been a shiner nitro babus. In England, I became a Rosh HaKoilel. He says, so the Baruch Hu wanted to be a Rosh HaKoilel. Says, he also mentioned to me that when he accepted Rabbonis, I mean, I'm getting off topic here, when he accepted Rabbonis in March and he made a tanai that he has to say Yeshiva and Yeshiva. Because Baruch said, Yeshiva has Yeshiva. I want to say Yeshiva. So I asked him, he said, if you want to be a full-time Rav, he said, there's to be a large kiva, a lot of things. So how do you have time, especially to insist that you have to keep saying Yeshiva and Yeshiva? So he said, Chamidgi bring Tasach Schoida from England. Has all the shiurim that he said over there. He just has it, so he has it all ready to say. So this was his hanukkah. Anyway, so I mentioned that the yid coming from Sunderland to England to raise funds for the yeshiva, right? And he did not have much success. Did not have much success in raising funds here in America, raising for yeshiva, you know, in England, in Sunderland. So he was disappointed. So he considered going back to England. He decided to ask Rabbi Yanki Kamenetsky to give him an etzah. So he traveled to Bianca's house in Muncie and explained his dilemma, and he says, people in America don't seem interested in supporting a yeshiva that is very far away and not well known. So Bianca said to him, tell each of the people you go to that no one knows whose study of Torah supports the world. Maybe it's the schus of the Torah that's learned in Sunderland. How do you know whose Torah supports the world? Maybe it's the Torah that's learned in Sunderland supports the world. That's what Bianchev told them. So it's just very interesting. Why am I mentioning this, Meister? Because maybe it stems very much with the teaching and the philosophy of Chaim Volozhin himself. And I quote, Chaim Volozhin writes in Nefesh HaChaim, in Perek Dalet, Yud Aleph, he writes the following, and it's very known, here's the Loshon. Rav Chaim says, V'em es bilti sofi klal. Rav Chaim says, it is the unquestionable truth. Is the unquestionable truth. He said, if there's even one moment somewhere in the world, it would be a time in the world that there's no learning anywhere. It would be even 1 minute, 1 moment, where there's no learning anywhere in the world, says Reb Chaim, it's emes bilti sofik, kerega hoyu nechravim kol ha'olomos elyoinim betachtoinim. He says, it's very clear, he says, that all the worlds, the upper and the lower spheres, v'hoyu le'efes v'toyu chaz v'sholom, would be destroyed, and the universe would be basically, would dissolve to nothingness. Which means to say, in order for the world to exist, there has to be Torah learned somewhere. By the way, this gives a little bit, I think, new meaning when we say V'chayu Olam Nota B'Sachenu, which can be translated that the life of the world he transplanted within us. In other words, we give life to the world. V'chayu Olam Nota B'Sachenu. If there would be no Yid learning Torah anywhere in the world, then the world would dissolve. So Marela, so when people are sleeping in one part of the world, but then other people are studying in the other part of the world. So Marela, so it comes out that every moment of the day, right, there should be Torah learned. So in fact, that was the system of Rav Chaim Volozhin, that he instituted in the yeshiva, that there was learning around the clock. It went by rotation. There never was a moment in the yeshiva be no learning. Be learning around the clock. Some brachim went to sleep, so others replaced them, and so on. So Torah came in. And maybe that's what Rabbi Yankov, by the way, had in mind. Because at the times in other parts of the world, maybe people are not learning. So it's the Torah of Sunderland. There might be that Torah that's really is sustaining the world. So Kaponim, just give us a little bit of insight again, Rabbi Yisai, a little bit of the accomplishments, the achievements of Rabbi Chaim Volozhin. So we go back now to Ruach Chaim, Rav Mamshich, from where we started and where we ended actually last week. So in your editions, I believe it's in Daf Ches on the fourth line. Val Zeh HaDerech, from the top. Daf Ches, Val Zeh HaDerech. All right. Is that extra one, extra copy here? Let's save it. Okay. Vazeh derech omru chazal. Actually, we didn't get to the maskona of what the purpose of what Rav Chaim is trying to develop. There's still the hakdomah to Pirkei Avos, actually. Rav Chaim is trying to explain where it says, Kol Yisrael yesh lem chelik le'olam habo. The depth of those words. Of Kol Yisrael yesh lem chelik le'olam habo. So we started out as Rav Chaim was developing his thesis. First of all, as we realized, Rav Chaim pointed out that when a person does a mitzvah, even before it performs a mitzvah. Rav Chaim pointed out that when a person merely contemplates and has a mind that he wants to do a mitzvah, all of a sudden, right, that thought, that mashavah, charges a tremendous aura of kedusha. He manages surrounded by an aura makif, that the experience of kedusha that he experiences even before he was makan the mitzvah, the mere thought that is all of the rayoinoi, was oiling his machshav to do a mitzvah, that machshav of doing a mitzvah creates a tremendous aura of kedusha. At kedekach, Reb Chaim's lashon is, v'hu k'mo yoshe b'gan eid mamish. He said, he's mamish in Gan Eden, he's in a different world. And certainly, says Reb Chaim, when you're actually doing the mitzvah, so that feeling, that agosha becomes even intensified even more. That idea. But the unfortunate thing about that is, because the flip side is also true, the Gabbai Naveira, where a person finds himself. So now, Reb Chaim goes further and says, Vazeh HaDerech Omru Razal, Rabbi Sein is a Chayin L'Brocha. Very famous member, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, Gedoy Rechuva. Tshuva is so great, she's a doinus, nasus loich zochius. Tshuva is so great that all the mazes, all the aveiros that you did willingly, knowingly, you do tshuva, and it just happens that the Gemara talks about tshuva mehava, the tshuva out of love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So gedoy tshuva, she's a doinus, nasus loich zochius. Then mommy, the aveiros turn into mitzvahs. And interesting enough is that many years ago, when everyone remembers when there was the tragedy, the spiritual tragedy that happened in Muncie regarding the sale of non-kosher meat, that many mamish chushevayin, shkechili chasidishin, elchin, that were nichshel for many months, and some for even for more than a year or so. We're not sure exactly how long, you know, this went on, but it's very, very clear that Yidden were terribly, terribly nichshel in Macholas Asuris, in the Velus Atreifus, and one can remember only the tremendous, tremendous heartache, even though it was a shoygit. They didn't do it willfully, nobody knew about it, but nevertheless, the Tzarist, first of all, Chazal say, that Macholas Asuris in Metamtim, Salev, Poshet, it stops the mind, it creates a barrier, right, that it blocks from really Kedusha entering in the mind and in the Nisham and so on. So these are the side effects. But it was a terrible thing. There was many drushes were given regarding possible Eitzah, this kind of an Eitzah, and to lift the spirits of Eden. So it occurs to me that clearly, Mamish, precisely the point is the words of the Chassam Sofer, the dress of Chassam Sofer. We're just learning over here that it says, Gedol Tshuva, that Tshuva has the power, that she's a doinus nasal kizokius. That even if you did a very b'mezid, forget about doing it b'shoigi, do it b'mezid, willfully. But if you do Tshuva out of love, not only Kosh Baruch Hu, right, wipes out the Avera and turns into a mitzvah. It's an incredible thing. You did an Avera and turns into a mitzvah. Some Sofer, regarding a particular drosha, happens to be a Shabbos HaGodol drosha, says, you know what that means? That if a person ate nevela, non-kosher meat, and you do tshuva mehava, it's like you ate a korban Pesach. Incredible. That's what tshuva mehava does. Turns the Avera into a mitzvah. So it's the doinus nasa kizochias. Shenema, the Potik says in Yecheskel. The Pesach says in Yecheskel, B'shuv Rosh Merishosoi, that when a Rosh does tshuva, right, from his evil deeds, but also Mishpat Tzedakah, and does the right thing, Aleim Hu Yichye. So the way the Gemara dashes, Aleim goes means even on the Avera. It's a difficult Rosh, because maybe the Aleim goes on the Mishpat Tzedakah that he did. That's the discussion Reb Chaim later on actually raises. But what the Gemara means to say, quite simply again, would be shuv rosh murishosoi, when a rosh basically does shuvah from his evil deeds, so the end of the pasuk is aleihem hu yichye. That means to say is that the aver itself is going to give him chiyus. Because the fact that he did shuvah, how can the aver give him chiyus? Right? So if the aver is merely wiped out, so the aver is not here, it's nothing. You're back to square one. No, the aver turns into an actual mitzvah. So the aleihem hu yichye. So the aver actually gives you chiyus. So the Indian Omru Aleim. Chaim Elojan is Madaik, it says Aleim Hu Yechiyah. It doesn't say Bohem Hu Yechiyah. It's noted that that's what he means, because from later on, when you learn over here, not sure what his problem is. So the Indian, what's the In Aleim? What's his problem? What's wrong with the word Aleim? So from the Sirim Advarim, you see, why doesn't it say Bohem? Bohem Hu Yechiyah. So Chaim points out the fact that it says the word Aleim instead of Bohem. So the Pshat is the following. Alderach, he says, Mashon Ruchazal. It's like Chazal have told us, regarding the Yetzer Hara. Tone. Regarding the Yetzer Hara is that actually he's very duplicitous. Yetzer Hara, actually what he does is it's double dipping. What do you mean double dipping? The Gemara tells us, yes, on the one hand, Yoyre Umate, the Yetzer Hara is the one who goes and deceives a person. He deceives a person and encourages him to sin. And now that you did what the Yetzer Hara wants you to do, he turns his back on you and he goes and prosecutes. Go to Shemayim, right? Go to Shemayim, and he bears witness to what you did. And he's a prosecutor. He accuses. In other words, Yoyre Umate. On the one hand, he comes down and he deceives you. And the Oyre Margis, and he goes up and he agitates. So right? So Marashik, if he went and taught you into an Aveir and you listened to him, you figure, so he's a friend of yours, right? No. You did what he wanted you to do, and now he goes and turns against you. Now that you listen to him, now he turns against you. In other words, he's the prosecutor and he's the one who caused you to do the Aveir in the first place. So Chaim Volozhin points out and he says, hey Nemes, the truth is, Kigama Yetzahara Loichotis Be'ele Sheyishim Uloi. The truth is, the Yetzahara truthfully does not really want, when he basically entices you to do an Aveira, his objective is not that you should listen to him. His objective is to give you an Esoyim, to give you a test. But what the Yetzahara himself really wants is that you should not listen, you should be Nizgabal on the Yetzahara. His job is to put you into an Esoyim. Yetzahara himself, Loichotis Be'ele Sheyishim Uloi. As the emotional of the Zohar Kodesh in Parshas Truma, we had in the Chumashit, I believe, a few weeks ago, we had this same Zohar Kodesh. And basically, the Zohar Kodesh gives us this emotional to a Melech. The Zohar Kodesh tells us that had a Ben Yochid. And he loved the Ben Yochid very much. And therefore, he wanted to make sure that the Ben Yochid is really loyal to him. He loves him so much and he gives him everything. So the Melech wanted to see how loyal the Ben Yochid is to him. And therefore he warned him. He warned him that he should not have a shaykhis, he says, with this immoral woman. This loose woman. He kept warning him to make sure to stay away from her. Mesar Hasheni, what did the Melech do? He hired the Zoyna. He hired a Davke to put a test and Davke to try to persuade a Davke to entice the son. And to bring her to a girl in Soyim. And the Kachave, she went, she did the Rosan of the Melech, she was hired by the Melech, she did the bidding of the Melech. And so she went after him, the Melech says she jumped on him, I won't get too graphic, but the Zohar Kodesh goes on, as a matter of fact, she didn't just talk to him, she went to him, she was Machabikim, she was Menashekim, and so on. And Lamaisa, what he did was, he pushed her aside. When he pushed her aside, the Melech had a Gevalig Yisimcha. He had a Gevalig Yisimcha from both. He had a Simcha on the Ben that he was able to be Oymer ben Soyim, but he also had a Simcha that the Zoyna did her job. Her job was to try to test the son, and because of her, it came out the loyalty of the son. If the Zoyna would not put the son through an Soyim, they would never have come out, the loyalty of the son. So the Zohar Kodesh says, as a matter of fact, that's the pshat we find the Chazal saying Bereishis, that Toiv is the Yetzer Toiv, Toiv Ma'oid is the Yetzer Hara. Because not for the Yetzer Hara, you will not see the loyalty that we have to Kodesh Baruch Hu. If not for the Nisoyinus, not for the obstacles that the Yetzer Hara throws in our path, no one really knew. It would not come out. And you yourself might even not know how dedicated and how loyal you are. So the Yetzer Hara really is Toiv Ma'oid, so there's a Simcha B'Shnei Tzedonim. First of all, that she did the Mitzvah Samelech, and Mitzvah Hasheni, that she was Goyim, she was the cause that the Ben showed how loyal he truly is. So that's what Reb Chaim points out over here. That the Yetzer himself does not really want. The job of the Zoyna is to basically challenge the Ben, but the Zoyna really hopes that the Ben would not listen to her. Because the Melech only hired her in order to put the son to the Nisoyim to see and hopefully that the Ben will show his loyalty. So the same with Yetzer Hara's job is to entice, Yetzer Hara is to persuade, to challenge, but Yetzer Hara Mitzad Atzmo hopes that Adrabah, that the challenges and the difficulties that the person will overcome it. So on the one hand, Yetzer Hara doesn't really want you to sin. But the fact is, he was going to cause you to sin if he succeeded, he was going to cause you to sin. Now, even though Mitzad Atzmo, he didn't want that. The fact is, he caused it. So Reb Chaim, if he caused it, then it's not really appropriate that he should be the one to go and prosecute you. Because the Maaseh Sof Kol Sof is because of him that you sinned, and because of him, he caused you to sin, and he goes not to prosecute you. So what's the pshat? How does it work that the Gemara Bava Basra tells us the Yitzhara is the one that Yoyed Umata, he comes to deceive, and he goes to prosecute. Achim calls that. He says, Sof Kol Sof, he says, Hoyeroi Elias Achim Mastin. Would seem more appropriate that another Malach should be the prosecutor. V'loi Ubeyatzimoi, Ashi Yorad, the Hesis. Umaralein Odom Vaket. The Yitzhara poses that what I'm trying to do, that's the right thing to do. Right? That's what the Yitzhara is trying to do. He tries to camouflage the truth. So he's basically putting stumbling blocks, putting obstacles in your way. He's basically deceiving you. And then after he was the one that caused you to sin, that he himself goes and causes. Right? And he's the Sultan. How does it work? So Chaim says a very, very interesting thing. We got the Yesahara. There are two parts to the Yesahara. This is a new, basically a new idea, a totally new concept of understanding what the Yesahara is all about, and actually the makeup of the Yesahara. Reb Chaim says, "Ach Yidua, it is known." Ki Hashem Baruch Hu, he says, "Mechaye Kulam." The existence of anything in this world is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anything that exists on this world, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu continues to give Schius, and as we know, the Beis Halev in Bereishis talks about it, Bariches, that not the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave Schius once and now it goes on its own, but every moment the Kadosh Baruch Hu keeps recreating the world. And Kadosh Baruch Hu, for one moment, the way the world stands today is not because it was created yesterday. But rather, Mechadish B'tuvay B'chol Yom Tomit. Kadosh Baruch Hu is Mechadish B'tuvay B'chol Yom Tomit. Continuously, Kadosh Baruch Hu recreates the world. So Mamela Kadosh Baruch Hu gives chiyus to anything that exists, Kadosh Baruch Hu is mechaye kulam, va'afilu koyach yetzer hara, and the koyach of the yetzer hara to do what he does, lo'hoi lo'i kiyum klal, af rega kala, even for one moment, bifu yinikim ha'kedusha. And that's a concept that we speak about many times, Bashal Hashidus a lot, that tumah, in order to thrive, has to have a yinikinis fuel. Tumah, evil, tumah, the opposite of kedusha. Tumah cannot exist, it would not have a unique in its fuel, and the fuel is, it thrives on Kedusha. And we'll see something very fascinating soon about that. So the male of the Yetzer would not be able to exist, it would not have a unique, it would not be draw. It has to suck Kedusha. It has to be able to basically, to satisfy itself, it has to be able to nurture itself. It has to be able to feed itself with Kedusha. So, says Reb Chaim, so where's the Chelik HaKedusha of the Yetzer Hara? So where is it? You can tell me the whole Yetzer Hara is filled with Kedusha? No. He said, B'shor shor lemala b'roish hu b'kedusha. The Chelik HaKedusha of the Yetzer Hara, that is so to speak in the head, and that is up in Shemayim. But the Yetzer Hara basically has the rest, you know, like you have just to understand it, you know, with our seichel, you think about a head, and then a body, a goof. So the Kedusha that the Yetzer Hara is yoinik is in the rush. That Yetzer Hara basically sucks. The Yetzer Hara basically is shayim, that he draws, is in the head. And the body of the Yetzer Hara, as spoke, is mishtal shulamato. The other end of the Yetzer Hara lowers itself down into this world, and it is that chelik. It is that chelik beyond the head, which is the body of the Yetzer Hara. That's the Bechinas Hara. That is the Bechinas Hara. That is the evil part. The Oilom, right? The Yoyred Umata. It is that portion of the Yitzhar that comes down to deceive a person. Are Yidei Koyach HaTachtin Sheboy. Through its lower forces. So now, so it comes out like this. So the Yitzhar is the Chelik of Kedusha. The lower portion of the Yitzhar that basically lowers itself, so to speak, down into this world, that is the Chelik Hara. So the Chelik Hara, the Yetzer Hara, that his job is to entice, to persuade people, to challenge people, like to make them sin. The Chelik HaRosh, that's the Chelik HaKedusha, that goes up to Kadosh Baruch Hu and bears testimony to the Avera. So it's the Yetzer Hara, but there's two different parts. These are two opposite poles of it within the Yetzer itself. The Chelik HaRosh has Kedusha. And that is in Shemayim. The Shayrish of that is in Shemayim. But the body of the Yetzer Hara, Kibyocho, that lowers itself down to this world, that Chelik is the Chelik Hara of the Yetzer Hara. That's the Chelik that causes all the trouble in the world. And when the Chelik Hara succeeds, it's not that Chelik that goes back in Shemayim. It's not. It's the Chelik HaKedusha Sheboi. That's the Chelik HaRosh. It says, Rebchaim, Ubechines HaElyon Sheboi Shebekedusha. Nesoro Lamailo, he says, Umekatrugu. So we still didn't finish the whole idea. Again, I didn't realize, you know, Reb Chaim's point is how to explain Kol Yisrael Shemchech Lo'el Mabor. Okay, but we have this concept. So I guess the remaining moments, let's take a look at what was at the sheet. And we'll see basically some of the concepts that we just learned now, even these few concepts, and to see how they play out. What we're going to do is we're going to work a little backwards to save time. Let's take a look. Let's start Reb Chaim with number two. Okay, we'll start with number two. Skip number one. If we have time, we'll go to number one. Number one is a very famous vort. It's actually something we spoke about Shal Shittis many times, some of the Avodas Yisrael, regarding the what Reb Chaim talks about the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara does not really want you to be subdued to him. I'd rather he wants you to overpower him. Let's leave that for a moment. Let's go to number two, on the right side and the bottom. Reb Chaim said, we just learned, Afila Koyach Yetzer Hara, he said, Lohoi Loi Kiyum Klau, Afrega Kala, even a short moment, Bilti Yenike Magdusha. The Yetzer Hara can only thrive, right, by basically it has to draw on Kedusha. It has to absorb Kedusha. So look at the bottom. So you have here the Be'er Hetev, right, in Hilchus Tainis, in Metov Kufal, in Aleph, Sif Aleph. The Be'er Hetev is the following, Vida, Shekola Maisim Shodom Oise. All the Maisim Toivim is talking about. The Toivim Shalom is Boidoi Roshe, Baba Nesena Horabim, Moisev Koyach Beklipus. Here you have a clear example that if someone basically learns Torah, unfortunately, and he's a Rosha, if an evil person learns Torah, you know what goes? It feeds the Satan. It feeds the Yetzirah. Until Achechoizer B'Tshuva Moisim Maklev. However, it's not all lost. The good news is that if you do Tshuva, that basically gets it all back. All the Torah and the Maisim Torahim, that basically, that the Satan, right, that the Satan took away from him, that comes back. He's able to be matzlit and able to retrieve it all after the tshuva. But meantime, while he's still a Rosh, all the Torah that he does, unfortunately, he goes and he feeds. But he goes and he feeds. He feeds the Satan and gives koyach to the koyach atumah. It's good to mention that Bimor Vishemesh, who is a Talmud of the Rebbe Meilach of Lizhensk, brings in the Sefer Mor Vishemesh in Parshas Devarim, what he heard from the Rebbe of Lublin, from the Chayz of Lublin. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu Parshas Devarim basically starts out giving Musa to Klal Yisrael. Eilat Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu Moshe Klal Yisrael. And as Rashi tells us, he only mentions the places that want to be mavaisim, that want to embarrass them. So he mentions, you know, Bamidbar, Marovo. By mentioning the locations, you know, when you have certain experiences, if I tell you location, what do you think of, right? You know, psychologists ask, when you see a tree, what do you think of, right? If you do, when you do a certain real transgression, a certain place, I just have to mention the place, you know right away what happened. Oh, don't remind me of that place. So Moshe Rabbeinu reminds and mentions all the places. He doesn't say what happened. They themselves know what happened. Lamais is given the Muslim to do tshuva. So the Moav Shemesh says, you heard from the Rabbi of Lublin, why this juncture is Moshe Rabbeinu being more of them, right, to do tshuva? Because it says a few psukim later, Hoyel Moshe Beres HaTorah Azos. Moshe was ready to teach the Mishnah Torah, ready to teach him Torah. Before you teach him Torah, make sure to do tshuva. Because if you don't do tshuva, then the Torah that you learn goes to the other side. Go to the Sitra Akra. You're feeding the Satan. So therefore, the proper way that when a Yid learns is to have a hear tshuva. Right? Right? I need you to learn. Who's asking to learn? First, do the right thing. Who needs your Torah? I need your Torah. This is the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Do the right thing. So, my mother, Uncle Parham, learned from the Ben Hated. Yes, the Sultan. Yes, the Sultan tries to capture as much Torah and Maisim Torah that it can. So here comes a frightening thing. Actually, look on top number 5 from Yosef Naibshitz, Yaris Davash. So it's a very long drasha, by the way. We took out mamish the nekuda that we want from that long drasha. Okay, so you can see it's in Chelik Aleph, Drush Aleph, in Yaris Davash. And he said the following. Kasha Darashti, Miyomim, Mikedem Azeh. By the way, this Shtichel Yaris Davash, come out all the Hasidic Rebbes, come out all bring it. Because it's actually a frightening thing that the Rebbe Bjornsson tells us over here. And this fits in exactly what we're learning right now. And let's take a look. And it's an amazing thing that you're going to see. There is, not everybody, by the way, first of all, not everybody eats Mother Malkim on Shabbos, they should. And even those that do eat Mother Malkim on Shabbos, not everybody sings Zemiris. And even if you do sing Zemiris, you don't sing all the Zemiris. Well, so one of the Zemiris is, you go home, you'll see the Zemiris, it begins, Adir Oyem Benoira. Talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the awesomeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Adir, right, the mighty one. Adir Oyem Benoira. So there is a phrase there. The phrase, and very interesting, Rabbi Bjornsson basically picks a phrase in the Zemiris. In the Zemiris, Adir Oyem Benoira, which is said on Motzei Shabbos, Soincho Miyad Goizim. Simply put, it means, Klal Yisrael are the Soin Kodshim. Klal Yisrael are the sheep of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Unfortunately, our enemies want to shear our wool, to put it mildly. So the Zemiris says that Kodesh Baruch Hu should save Soincho. Kodesh Baruch Hu should save his sheep Miyad Goizim from those who want to shear the sheep. The Kitzer, we're asking is for Shmira. Kodesh Baruch Hu protect his sheep. Okay. Save the Yaris Davash. Horotzoin. You know what it means? Shalapomim, he says many times on Uroim or the Merosha Shechoizim B'Tshuva. We see. Merosha Shechoizim B'Tshuva. The Haina, his Chayz B'Tshuva meaning is that Yoshev B'Tzoyim, Atke Dekach, you see that he's fasting, Ubechi, and he's crying, Mispalish B'Ofor. You see basically that he's rolling in the dust. He's rolling in the dust. Okay, Haina Dvam Toy B'Kitzer. We're talking about a situation where you find where Rosh Hashanah is doing Tshuva. The Kashe Yavu Yomim Achodim, but it's the half of the fellow. If a Rosh Hashanah decides to do Tshuva, You would assume he saw the light. What brought him to do tshuva? You assume he saw the light, and many times that's the reason. He really saw the light, and therefore it becomes about tshuva, and hopefully stays that way. The Yazdavash says, and makes an observation, many times you find people doing tshuva, and unfortunately it doesn't last. After a while they just turn back, they just go back the way they were. What is the reason behind it? Now, you can sit down and write briefs and write papers, all the psychological reasons. But Elsinab tells us the Pinimi Sadvarim. That's something that we don't see on the surface, and he explains it. Let's take a look. Why is it that tshuva does not always last? And Rosh does tshuva. And by the way, he says it was a real tshuva. Yoshua Bitsoim, he was fasting, Mispalish Brofa, rolling in the dust, and so on. Crying! He meant it seriously. There's no question, at the time he meant it seriously. Why did it not last? Why did the tshuva not last? What happened? Said the Yazdavash. Again, because Yavru Yomim Achodim, we see later on what number of days pass. Here, Uchayzer Lusura just turns back to where he was, but Maisa Mukul Kolim. Right? He does terrible deeds. Vinishkach, after the cast, up to the point, Vinishkach Yemei Asova Mitra Yemei Arov. The good times are forgotten, right? Due to because of the bad times that's now. We see all the bad that's being done now. We forget that he ever was even about Shuvah. We forget that. What happened over here? The Sibyl was there. Again, I tell you, it's a frightening thing what he says. The Sibyl was there. Who came on and gives a moshel. The moshel is come on. Shemevakshim legozoi, right? When you want to have a lot of wool. Obviously, if you want to shear the wool of a sheep, you'd like to have a lot of wool. So you know what you do? You try to feed the sheep. You try to feed the sheep certain foods or give them enough to drink that will encourage and stimulate growth. So the sheep, you know, is very happy at the Sarecho, right? You're giving him all the food, you're giving him enough water. He doesn't realize that the only reason is because you, on the one hand, you want to stimulate growth, but the only reason you want to stimulate the growth is to cut it off. So you're stimulating growth to cut it off, to get rid of the growth. You're stimulating growth to get rid of the growth. Okay, so let's take a look. To be able to use the wool, to utilize it for anything that you'd like to use it for. You want the wool. So what do? You want to have enough wool. So yitnlo elecho melech, there's another gear, elecho melech, velishtos mayim, there's different versions. So he feeds the sheep all the proper foods. Right? Ukedayme, hamegavel tsemelemoid. Right? He wants to have enough wool to shear. So therefore he feeds the sheep all the right foods that stimulates tsemer, the kashya yigdala tsemer, but now that the tsemer has grown, your gozer is going to cut it off. And this is the cycle. You cut off the wool. What happens after you shear the wool? Now you feed the sheep again. You feed the sheep all these special foods that stimulate growth to, just to cut it off. Then again, so you make it grow to be able to cut it off. You make the wool grow to cut it off. Now look. V'cheina sitra achra. It's an unbelievable thing. The same thing is with the sotan. Sitra achra means the yitzahar. Yoinkim in Yisrael. As Rav Chaim told us, Tumah has to be yoinik. In other words, the Tumah sucks out Kedusha. Tumah wants to suck Kedusha. So the sitra achra yoinkim in Yisrael. Ho oive shefas Kedusha asheboi. The sotan tries, right, to suck out all. As much kedusha as it can, right? Shifas kedusha, all that sports kedusha. V'hulahem lamichya. That gives the sustenance to the sitracha. But the sustenance to the sultan is the fact that it's yoinik. It draws out. It sucks out kedusha. From whom do they do? From whom do they have a chance to suck out the kedusha? Unfortunately, even people who are rishoyim, but everybody has a certain level of kedusha within this. If they would have no kedusha, they're able to exist. So what they do is the Yitzhar and the Sotan, when they basically they find themselves surrounding themselves with Yishoyim, but the idea is to be able to suck out every little vestige of Kedusha that's left. I mean, just enough to take it out. See? Bolachain Sovi Rishoyim Yisalochum. It's a posik, right? In Tehillim. Sovi Rishoyim Yisalochum. You know why? To be able to be Yoinik, to take out any Kedusha, right? As much Kedusha as possible. So now what happens? So now, you know, the sultan took out, like this called the person's called Ruvain, right? The sultan sucked out all the kedusha that's able to suck out, can't suck out anymore. The sultan needs kedusha to survive. You know what sultan does? He encourages the Russia to do mitzvahs. The sultan encourages the Russia to do mitzvahs. In order he should absorb kedusha within his neshama. Once the Russia now is filled with kedusha, the sultan now goes again and sucks it out. It's like the mosquito, you know, sucks out blood. The sultan sucks out kedusha. in order to make sure that there's Kedusha to suck out. It is not enough to soften himself. So many times you might see a Baal Tshuva, this is what the Rebbe is telling us. Why did he become a Baal Tshuva? Not because he on his own will would have become a Baal Tshuva. The Satan convinced him, the Satan was the one who inspired him, only to the point to be able to, that he should have enough Kedusha to suck it out. Once the Satan has what he wants, the Rosh can just go back to where he was. Again, he says, "Ach kashem yoinkim." But once the Satan already drew out, sucked out. Ukvar nafsho yevesho. The Rosh has no more kedusha to give him, so to speak. Ve'ilach luchas kedusha oid bo. Ki Hashem saw ma'olo. Because Baruch is now totally removed from this person. Umaisav roim v'chatoim. Mahim oisim. So what does the Satan do now? He needs kedusha to suck out. But he already sucked it all out. So what does the Satan do? Noisnin leliboy loshu v'lashem v'lasis toy. It's a half of the fellow. The Satan himself is the one that encourages you to do tshuva. The Satan is the one that drives you to do tshuva. The Satan is the one that's going to stimulate you to do tshuva. The last is that Ad Asher Yedusha Nafsho, his nefesh becomes fat. Right? The nefesh becomes fat with mitzvahs. The nefesh becomes fat with kedusha. Asher Yedusha Nafsho Mituv Hashem Kefi Avedoso, according to the extent that he did mitzvahs, this person. The Yemolei Toy V'Berches Hashem. Ah, V'Oz Kasheroyim. When the Satan sees the Yashmin Yeshurin, when he sees that the Eden, that the fat, spiritually fat, we're talking about, the Nafshem Olatoy, Oz Yimnoi. So now the Satan turns around and blocks him. Now the other way. Now the Satan makes a left turn with this person. Now it tells him to run a different there. Now the Satan is Moneya. Now the Satan holds back. Now the Satan blocks that same person. Meleilo B'Mitzvah Hashem Kipam B'Tam. The Yoinkim Emenu. Now the Satan has the ability to be Yoinik Kol Shefas Kedusha. Any vestige of Kedusha. When he's saying, Rabbi, where does it go? Nois Nechelko Luzorim. To strange forces. The Koichel Enochrim. It goes to the evil forces. So Rabbein Sinaibshis, once we have, we understand this concept, that's Pshat and the Zmiris. That's what he's bringing to us. How do we say Pshat? V'zeh ha-bekosha ha-nal. Sh'Hashem miyatze lo yisonu. Da'ayinu v'lakach oma. Tzoyin cho miyat goizim. We are the Tzoyin. The Jewish people are the Tzoyin. And the Satan is the one who wants to be goizes the wolves. This is the Moshul. The Satan is the one who wants to be goizes the wolves, meaning is that he wants to draw out and suck out all the Kedusha. And as a result, what does the Satan do? He stimulates the growth of that wolf. Stimulates that what they should do mitzvahs temporarily. Only just enough to be able to suck it out again. That's our tefillah of Baruch Hu, that we should be spared. That this shouldn't happen. And finally, we have over here one more nekuda, and that is, okay. Actually, this really we didn't get to that point, Mamish, so we're going to leave it. So just like Mamish, I took 4 minutes left anyway. So again, I know we just don't finish the sheet. I'm glad you skipped the first part, so we can get to the second part. So I mentioned the following, talking about, you know, the in the cheshivas of mitzvahs bechlal, and the idea, you know, the achrayus that a yid is supposed to have. Rabban writes in Mishnah Sovan in Chele Gimel, he writes that the avodas Odom basically is that a person should have an achrayus to the tzibur. It actually runs along the lines that you find in the Hagdomas of Nefesh HaChaim, Ki Yidu, that Rabbi Yisrael Volozhin said that Rabbi Chaim was very upset on Rabbi Yisrael, who was the son of Rabbi Chaim, The fact is that he seemed to be more consumed with himself and his own avodah. That he's not so concerned about the tzibur, and he said, Odom lo nivra ele lohoye lacher, the famous words of Rabbi Chaim. A person was not created for himself. A person was created to benefit others. That's the purpose of this world. It's not about you. You know, the Rebbe Yatz of Lubavitch, figure of Lubavitch Rebbe, he said, Baal Shem Tov said, it's kedai for a Yid to be born and to live 70, 80 years on this world if you only did a toive for a Yid once. It's kedai. Die. Tina toive to Yid once. Odom le nivra elo lahoy lacherim. That's what Rebbe Yatz said. Rebbe Yitzchak. So Baal Shem Tov writes about the person should not say Shalom Alei Nafshi. Shalom Alei Nafshi means this, he should not be satisfied with what he's doing for himself, but you have to have a sense of community. So there was a Rav, maybe you heard of his name or not, but I'll mention something associated with him, then the Vada you're going to know, everybody's going to know. There was a Rav in the early 1900s, name was Rav Lozer Meir Priel. Rav Lozer Meir Priel was a great Talmid Chacham, wrote a sefer called Sefer HaMoir. What a sefer called Sefer HaMoir. And there's a Rav of Elizabeth, New Jersey. for 14 years. In those days, you can remember the 1920s, Elizabeth, New Jersey, the Jewish community, you understand, were not as observant as you find out Bechlal, as the world has moved forward, Baruch Hashem. And communal observance, it was here and there, some people more, some people less. Lamaisa, one might still remember in the early shuls in America, even though you're born a little bit later, but you certainly heard about it. It was a tkufa, first of all, not every yid had a sukkah. There was times that people would eat in the community, the shul had a sukkah. Maybe you meant after davening, you made kiddush in the sukkah. They went home and you ate your sukkah at home. Mm-hmm. Very common thing. And the same with a lulav and an esrog. Not every yid had a lulav and esrog. It was not. You don't have to have a lulav and esrog. The rov of the kehila would buy a lulav and an esrog for the whole kehila. And then it would stand in line and every yid would bench in the esrog. They would give him a tonne. Matonah must ours. Every yid would give him a tonne because you have the first day of sukkahs has to belong to you. First 2 days, actually. So there, this is the way it went. So and certainly you realize, talking about the 1920s and 30s, right? So the kehila, Rabbi Pryor, he used to buy, like every rov who had the same issue, whereby there would be one set of a lulav and esrog. They didn't have their own, everybody. So one for the kehila, and everybody would use it. This is the way it went. So it was the 1933 I'm talking about. 1933 was a few weeks before Sukkot, and Rabbi Pryor becomes very sick. Rabbi Pryor becomes very sick. So just a few hours before Yontif, so Rabbi Pryor calls a Choshev Rav who was his colleague, and his name is Ramnos Notter Zuber. Yes, related to, who was a Choshev Rav, Choshev Talmud Chacham, was a Rav at that time in Roselle, New Jersey. Not far from Elizabeth, Roselle, New Jersey. And Rabbi Pryor tells him, it's a few hours, it was a few hours before Yom Tov. He says, I need you, please come right away. And they said, that's before Yom Tov. He said, I don't really have the time now, maybe you can speak Chalamoy. He says, so Rabbi Pryor says, no, I need you, you have to come right now, please come, I need you now a few hours before Sukkot. So Lamais, even though he was busy, but Rav, who was sick and he's asking, he needs to see me, he went. And he says the following, he says, I have only one son, said Rabbi Pryor, his name is Yeshua Yosef. He's 9 years old. 9 years old, which means, if Chas V'Sholom might pass away, said Rabbi Pryor, during Sukkot, the first day, my son would Yerush, he's a Yerush, 9 years old, he would Yashin the Lulav and the Yesrik. As a result, a minor would not have the ability to transfer ownership. When people want to use the Lulav and Yesrik, he cannot be Makne. So I want to be Makne the Lulav and Yesrik to you. I want to be marked in the Lulav and Yesrik to you, that you, if Chas V'Sholom something happens to me, you will be able now to be able to serve the kehila, to serve the congregation. So regardless of what happens to me, said Rabbi Pryor, the Abba Minim would belong, right, in its rightful way to be able to perform the mitzvah on Yom Tov. Kinyan was performed, he passes away, Rabbi says, 6 hours later. So, shows you that, with mitzvah, talking about a mitzvah, talking about thinking about doing a mitzvah. Even the face of death, you can take a look with remarkable foresight. As Rabbi said, the person after Shalom Alach Nafshi, but rather have a sense of community. Even Mamshe Prince just had a few hours to live. And apparently he felt it, that his time was very short. What do you have in mind, Mamshe, a few hours before going to the next world, he has in mind that the killer should not be left without the opportunity. So, in his will, in his savor, Rabbi Pryor asked the kehila to delay appointing a successor until his daughter gets married. Because hopefully, his daughter gets married to someone who's fit to be a rov. If she does marry someone who's fit to be a rov, he asks the kehila to appoint the son-in-law to be a rov. And that was, as we know, Rabbi Pinchas Teitz. He was the son-in-law, and he, of course, succeeded to the Rav. And Reb Pinchas has a son, Reb Loza Meir, who is the Rav now, named after Reb Loza Meir Pryor.